Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
I'm so excited to be joined today by Paloma Galzi, forensic artist. We've been talking to Paloma for a few months over on TikTok, which is where we found you, and we're really thankful for your time. Welcome to True Crime Cast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I, like I said, found you on TikTok, been watching a lot of your videos even today just to make sure that I'm on the right, ask the right questions, but... Mm-hmm. Before we get to your videos, which I love, obviously, let's talk a little bit about your career. How did you become a forensic artist? How did you know that that's something you're even interested in? As a kid, I don't think that's a something that comes up a lot at career day.
No, that is not something to tell you in school that this is an option. So I actually, I was doing a undergrad in illustration, fine arts. And towards the end of it, randomly at home, I saw on TV a wanted poster that was hand-drawn. And I was like, wait a minute. You can actually draw for law enforcement? This is crazy. Like, I didn't know. Like, I am from France. I was raised in France, in Paris. Okay. And I've never in my life saw, you know, anything like this. So I was like, wow, this is super interesting. And at that moment, I turned to my, you know, at the time housemaid. And she was like, oh, yeah, that's called forensic art. You should look it up. So I was like, oh my gosh, okay. So I looked it up and everything that I found was so interesting because it was just a lot of art mixed, you know, with the forensic world. And I was like, okay, this is really cool. This is very interesting. And I kind of want to, you know, see where this is going. And I was in California at the time. And I looked up, you know, any kind of program in schools, and turns out there's only one school in the world that provides a full-on program to be a forensic artist. Wow. And it's in Scotland. So, you know, I decided to go.
Yeah. I mean, we don't need a lot of excuses to visit Scotland, right? It's fun. It looks exactly like a fun place anyway, but that's a great one.
Yeah, so I finished my undergrad in California, got accepted to, because it's a master's degree, so got accepted to the master's degree and spent a year and a half in Scotland doing that. And yeah, that was so interesting. We were, you know, trained in four different categories. So we were trained in age progression. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when somebody goes missing for a long period of time, then you would want to see what they would look like today, and send out a picture to people for people to see, and maybe it can trigger their memory about something, you know. So so age progression, facial reconstructions, 2D and 3D. So that's when you have somebody that is recovered, sadly deceased, but you don't know who they are. And the first step for the investigation is usually, you know, getting to know who that person was, to be able to figure out what happened. So recreating the face, either from morgue pictures, you know, erasing the trauma for crime scene pictures to provide an image that's viewable to the public, or from skeletal remains, in which case you either work in 3D or 2D with pictures of skull or a CT scan of skull. Mm-hmm. And you try to recreate the face. Same goal, to put an image out there for the public to view, and make sure that, you know, these faces are seen by the right people. Okay. And I was also training composite sketches. So if you have you have witnessed an incident, you saw someone doing something, you are going to describe that person to me, and I will draw a little sketch.
Okay.
And for law enforcement, you know, similar to similar principle where you have to put that image out there and make sure that it's viewed to the public. for somebody to, you know, recognize them, and come forward. And the final area of expertise is facial recognition, facial analysis, more than facial recognition. We don't do anything computerized, but we do manual facial analysis. So being able to compare two images, if you have a passport dispute, or if you have somebody in custody, and if you have somebody, you know, on camera, being able to say, yes, maybe that could be the person, or no, it's not, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, great. Yeah. And I have questions about the different areas of expertise that we'll get to in a minute. But you mentioned studying art and being and loving art. What drew you to the police, the forensics piece? Was there a background of interest in crime stories? What got you there?
Yeah, just you know, a background in cold cases, in crime stories, especially when I came to the U.S. to study, and I was in California, and my housemate had all these. She already had that passion for, you know, crime and forensic TV shows and such. So she really got me into it, and I discovered, you know, a bunch of different serial killers within the U.S. that I didn't know existed. I was very interested in the whole backstory and, you know, the investigation and all that. So that just kind of, I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. There was already, you know, the interest. And then I was like, oh, I can actually be a part of this.
Yeah.
This could be fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not often we find two interests converging into a career like that. So awesome for you. And I know, so this is your job. This isn't just something you do on TikTok, obviously. So how does your involvement in a case begin? How does it arrive to you? And then kind of what are your expectations once you get it?
Yeah, so I do two different types of work, right? I do my 9-to-5 job, which is at a nonprofit as a forensic imaging specialist or forensic artist. And then I also do some cases on the side, which I will also, you know, post on TikTok. So during the day for my 9-to-5 job, we don't have to look for the cases. We have case managers that will be able to say, hey, we need an update on this kid. Can you do that? Right. So, and this is our everyday, you know, everyday kind of load work. It will be age progressions or facial reconstructions. So the way that I go about it is that I kind of research whatever we have on the person, on the case, the details. And for an age progression, for example, what I'm going to be needing is a lot of family reference pictures, just because with those, I have more information on how, you know, the family grew, the family evolved, especially siblings or cousins. So it's very interesting for me to be able to see how these people evolve, to be able to recreate an image of the child that went missing or the person that went missing. Like we focus only on children for my 9-to-5 job. So lots of family reference pictures, and then I use Photoshop. So everything is done by hand. And I try to, you know, take some reference pictures other than the family, just to find some facial features that would match the person that I'm working on. And sort of like a collage, import those into a new image and create a new image, right? So that takes about maybe a day and a half to create. So that's, you know, the workload that we do at my nonprofit job. And we, you know, we only focus on kids' cases. After hours, I do some age progressions, but a little bit different, a little bit, you know, some people could be weirded out by it, but I found that there was a lot of people wanting to have a picture of a family member that had passed away for a certain amount of time, and they wanted to look, you know, to see what they would look like today. So I figured, you know, I saw that there was a growing demand on my TikTok audience. So I decided to take on those cases and do those as well. Yeah. So same, you know, same thing.
Sure.
It takes, you know, about a day and a half to create with Photoshop. And I try to ask my, you know, my client, if they have like the more pictures, the better for me, right. The more accurate I'm going to be. Right.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fascinating. Yeah. And I assume when you're recreating these, you have a target age of, I have this picture from this year to now is usually when you're. Yeah,
exactly. Okay. Yeah. I'll be using like, you know, a database of images within that category to make sure that I'm close as possible. Yeah.
I've seen in some of your videos there are other folks in your office. Do you work on these cases individually, or is it a team effort? And how do you support each other in your work?
So we each have different cases. So with our children's cases, we have to update them every 2 years before they turn 18, and then every 5 years after they turn 18, just because there's going to be less, you know, changes in the face. But every time you have to update a case, it will go to a different forensic artist in our unit. And what we do is every time we create a new age progression, we send it out to the coworkers. So for feedback, they say, hey, you know, you should tweak this a little bit, just lower the nose, like make this a little bit rounder, etc. So that way we get this whole feedback, we modify it, and then we send it out.
Did everybody that you work with go to this program in Scotland, or were they trained in other ways?
They were trained in different ways. Not everybody was, you know, as lucky as I am to have, you know, gone, because I was close by. Since I was, you know, I'm French, so it was really close to be able to go. And my other coworkers all have a background in fine arts, illustration, animation, sculpture. All of these are very important on a day-to-day, you know, basis for our work.
Yeah, awesome. Is there a type of task, whether that's the age progression, the reconstruction, witness description, do you have a favorite way to or favorite type of case to work on in that way?
Not really. I don't think I have a favorite. The cases that we're going to have the most are the age progressions. The cases that we're going to have the least are facial reconstructions. So I guess it's like a nice break from the day-to-day work. So I kind of look forward to that, to those, you know, cases. But you know, it's always very gruesome cases, gruesome details, especially involving children. So it's always difficult.
Sure. Yeah, that's tough. We've been doing this for a long time, and the more kids cases we cover, the more I never want to cover again, because they are tragic. Obviously, I don't know, probably extra tragic. And then the work you're doing is so much more important. And you did mention you were trained in witness description. Do you ever have to do that?
Mm-hmm. No, not not with my job right now. We don't. That's something that we don't do, mostly because, you know, children.
Yeah.
Can't really do that kind of work. And it automatically goes to law enforcement, who have their own, you know, artists that will do that kind of work. And it's mostly for adults, not really for children.
Yeah. And that's the type of forensic art that I think most people are familiar with. So that's why when I saw your work, I was like, wow, this is different. Because generally witness reliability is tough anyway. So trying to go from the words that somebody else is applying to something they barely remember has to be a big challenge. A lot of your work, it looks like, is on the computer. I saw one video this morning of you have a pen that's kind of attached to an arm that works in Photoshop, I guess. How much is technology advancing, and like, is AI changing the way you do your work?
So we, during my, 9-to-5 job, we're not really involved with AI just yet, just because we don't know really how to integrate it with our day-to-day workload. But that's something that we want to integrate because it would actually make our job a lot faster,
sure.
I believe. So we could, focus on a lot more cases because there's always cases to be done, sadly. So we're not yet. It's in the talks, but it's still something that's, slow to progress towards too. So yeah, we're hopefully one day.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you get cases that are very timely at your nonprofit? Is it more cases that are cold you're helping support, or is it? Yeah. Okay. So, mm-hmm.
It's only cold cases. So there's,
you don't get the, really, we need this in an hour, please, kind of thing.
Yeah, no, we do get some, rush requests if media wants to do a push on those cases and mm-hmm. they need an update of, an age progression, or they need a new picture for a new facial reconstruction. So we're going to do that in a little bit faster for a media push. But usually, they tell us enough in advance, and that way we don't have to really rush the work, which is good. Yeah.
And you guys are obviously not out in the media. You're not the face of investigation. So, but what does it feel like when your work contributes to helping find somebody or helping a case get solved? I bet that's amazing, right?
It is. It's amazing. And it really, for me, it's so interesting to see that, that what I actually produced, helped an investigation, right? Mm-hmm. So the case is not closed, but if it has been reopened, it's a new step for investigators to be able to reopen the case or continue the investigation and find out what happened to these people. And it's just so heartwarming to be a part of it, because we're in the background. We're like a last resort situation when they come to us to ask us for whatever image. So we're always like, in the back, and it's like, oh my God, yes. Like, one of my images made it out, and you can see it on TV, and you can talk about it on the media and all that. So that's really, really cool. And to think that, family finally gets an answer of where their kid was, all these years. So,
That's awesome. I know we talked about before that you can't get into specific cases, but are there cases mm-hmm. that if you were able to tell us that we would know any of the names that have come through your nonprofit in recent years, like some big named out on that are everywhere in the news already?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk about, you can see on my TikTok page, the ones that were allowed to post, you might have seen those in the media. So if you do a little bit of research, and I post names. So, for example, Alicia Navarro, mm-hmm. she was recently found. She actually reported herself not missing, went into, a police station. She was missing her mother had reported her missing for 4 years, and she was with a male predator for all these years. So, cases like this that will get some media attention. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Something I've been thinking about a lot since I first saw your videos, because art got you interested in this. Forensics, I think mm-hmm. if you were to put a label on it, would be a science. How much of your job would you say is art, and how much of it is science?
I don't know if I can put a percentage or something, but there's a bigger percentage of art and maybe a smaller percentage of science, because when, we train to be forensic artists, there's a lot of anatomy involved. We had also, ethic classes and a few law classes, and to make sure that, We know a little bit about, for example, the process of taphonomy, like decomposition process and such, to be able to understand the decomp process. So you can't recreate, you know, what is not there anymore, things like this. We had also, and I think these were my favorite classes, but we had access to a big morgue because the University of Dundee, where the program is, has a medical area. And attached, there was we had a huge morgue that we had access to. So we were able to, you know, take a look at everything anatomy wise, to be able to understand the face, the neck, everything. So, yeah, it's like there is definitely a part of science there.
Right. And I think when people are interested in crime and look at evidence, they see DNA. There's a whatever percent chance mm-hmm. we could exclude this person or not. We see ballistics of there are 3 points mm-hmm. of matching on this bullet. What are the, if our listeners are interested just in the, I guess how do you measure this is a good progression or this is how we know this person is that person? Is there a way that can be described to say there are this many points of matching or is it really just in the eye of, yeah, they look the same? Because the work mm-hmm. you do, I mean, it's you make things on the computer that look like real people. It's kind of scary, mm-hmm. but what is that if we're just talking in the court of law? Have you had to testify?
No.
Okay.
No, because it's still something that is too, I guess, not scientific enough, mm. right? So it's an approximation. And it's not something that can be defined, characterized in court just because it's still art, yeah. right? So the goal is, if we create an image, is not to create a portrait because that's impossible, but to create a likeliness, right? Mm-hmm. And to be able to put that image out for somebody to recognize that person and say, hey, you know, the case details kind of fit. And I feel like this kind of looks like whoever, right. you know, disappeared a while back, my friend, my uncle, my sister, whomever. So because it's based on, you know, a kind of like a feeling you have, you kind of know that it's that person, you're looking at a drawing and you're like, okay, this reminds me so much of, right? Right. So this is why, like, we don't get called in court because it's just based on a feeling, really. It's right. based on art, and you know, it's not something that can be brought to court just yet.
That's interesting because right? I mean, some of these just mm-hmm. are so good that in our eyes or our vision's probably our most perceptive sense and the one we use the most. So it's I don't know, that's a bit surprising to me. And getting a little bit more in the weeds, mm-hmm. and feel free to just tell me stop, but. So if you mentioned getting trained in ethics, are there times when you're asked to recreate something, but there are images that you're not allowed to see because it may skew your projection, whether that's an age progression or I'm sure mm-hmm. they don't want to give you a picture of this is what this, there are times when you don't want to say, I need to make it match this other picture. I want to go off of yeah. what I really have. Is mm-hmm. that a thing?
That happened a few times, you know, for the media, they want to make sure that the image you create matches exactly what they have in mind. And that is a just no,
yeah,
that is no, sure. no. And like, if you want me to, you know, if you want us to recreate a new age progression or whatever the case is, then fine. But like, I don't want to see anything prior. Don't send me anything. And I'm not going to, you know, make something to fit your needs.
Yeah.
Just because you want it. That's not how it works. So right. yeah, it's rare, but it had happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
It has happened.
Mm-hmm. I know when CSI first became really popular in America, everybody was saying, I want to do this for a living. And then they would go to college and find out, wow, science is hard. I hate chemistry. So then they end up doing something else. For people that are interested in this, what would you advise them to think about as far as, well, you better be ready for these things, or guess what? You really get to do these things. And I'm selfishly, I'm saying this I have a daughter who's a very talented artist. I don't know that she would be interested in this, but if mm-hmm. she was, what would you tell her?
I would tell her that it's an amazing, you know, it's an amazing field. It's very rare to find, there's not a lot of forensic artists around the right. country, let alone around the world. So if it's really something that, you know, they would want to do, I would say go for it. Never give up, because it's kind of hard to get into that field.
Yeah.
You're going to get a lot of pushback, but it's not impossible. I'm from France, and then I went to, Scotland and California, and now I'm here in Virginia. So working and doing what I love, and it's amazing, but it took a lot of time. I would also say you have to be able to detach yourself yeah. from some things, because if you cannot work with, so we're never on site, so we don't see firsthand gruesome things, but we will see the pictures. So if you can't see that, yeah. You have to be able to do that job. So you have to be able to put that aside, to put your feelings aside, to put aside, what happened, the story behind it, all of that. And I always remember when we were in Scotland, one of the first more classes, somebody was not able to do it. They were like, nope, I can't do this. And they just dropped out of the class completely. Yeah. I was like, yeah, if it's not something that you feel comfortable around, then it's probably not for you, because you have to be able to separate those feelings from the work that you do.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm sure that's super tough. But we appreciate the fact that you do it, because I obviously your work speaks for itself. You can follow Paloma over at Galzy Forensics on TikTok. Mm-hmm. You're also on with TikTok being kind of, I don't know, here a minute and gone the next. Where else can people find you to follow your work?
Instagram, same handle, Galzy Forensics. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if people would like to enlist your services in your mm-hmm. private, practice of this, should mm-hmm. they contact you through social media? Is there another way?
Yes. No, okay. Through social media is great. I have my email in, the bios, either on TikTok or Instagram. So if they message me directly on my email, not, inbox right. of those social media, because I don't really look at them, or it takes me like weeks to get through it. So no, direct email.
Okay.
Simple.
So find her email address on social media, stay mm-hmm. out of her DMs, and then and then reach out. Now, this has been a fascinating conversation, and I'm sure I'll come up with a million more questions to email you about. Mm-hmm. But thanks so much for hanging out with us today.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It was great. Thank you.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.